Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Nicole calling from Hamilton, and I needed to let everyone know that I really proudly support Vish and Creative Control. I have for many years, I will for many more, as long as he keeps delivering these amazing interview podcasts. When you hear one of Vish's interviews, you think he's known this guest for years, they're good friends. But the truth is, he approaches every interview, whether it's sort of up-and-coming indie artists or established icons or like famous intimidating comedians with a really deep, genuine curiosity. So he's never met this person, and the same really warm candor as though he's known them forever. I think it really lends to a great chat no matter who he's talking to. And for that reason, I think you should throw Vish, like what, $1 a month? He's got jokes. The jokes make it worth it. Support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and remember, when you name a dog Janet or Timothy, you are dragging humanity down just a little bit.
Land of Talk is a band fronted by Elizabeth Powell, who is currently based in Montreal, Quebec. Originally from Ontario, where they spent formative years in both Orillia and Guelph, Powell has been writing and playing music publicly since their teens and is regarded as one of the finest songwriters and guitarists of their generation. Following a prolonged 7-year break from releasing new music, Land of Talk gifted us with 2017's acclaimed Life After Youth. Luckily for us, we didn't have to wait as long for their excellent new album, Indistinct Conversations, which was released by Dynalone Records in Canada and worldwide via Saddle Creek on July 31st, 2020. Liz returned to this show so that we could have a chat about being back in Montreal since we last spoke, reuniting with the original Land of Talk power trio configuration, living life alone and among other people during a pandemic-induced lockdown. Aaron Riches and Fugazi's Guy Picciotto, their new approach to singing and guitar playing on Indistinct Conversations, future plans, and more. Part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Tara Lightfoot, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 555th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely, talented, and thoughtful Elizabeth Powell from Land of Talk, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Liz. How's it going?
Hi, Vish. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Montreal. I'm back in Montreal, living and breathing.
How's that going? Last time we talked, you were in Orillia area?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Back in my hometown.
Right.
I did sort of this little, I guess, unexpected hiatus that lasted about 5 years. And I found myself back in my hometown.
Right.
Of Orillia, which is my hometown before Guelph became my hometown at 12 years old. It's kind of this tale of two hometowns that I have to always grapple with. Like, what's my real hometown? They're both real, you know? Like, Guelph is where the music kind of started, but Orillia is where my life started. So I guess I have two hometowns.
Right. And your music and your life are both huge. I mean, obviously your life is a pretty big part of your life. And then...
Right? I can't really... It's inextricably linked to my life as I know it.
I think we covered this. You were on not too long ago, on the show, I mean, like two, three years ago. So we covered some of this. But what do you... Now that you're back, as you say, in Montreal, what do you reckon prompted that hiatus, as you described it?
I don't know. Well, it could have, knowing me, it could have been, it was a confluence of things, but avoidance. I think there was just this wanting to avoid certain things, maybe in my personal life, like a breakup that you're just kind of like, head for the hills. Like, so I think it was just supposed to be this little, I just need a break. And then I think, and also touring, and also my memory is so shoddy at best. So this was all like 10 years ago, I think. So it was like 2011, I think, is when I finally made the move. But I think I just needed to regroup and just get away from it all, as they say. Mm. And that's what I did. And then I think, as I covered in a lot of other like press for the last record, I ended up staying there because my dad suffered a major stroke and ended up hemiplegic, and he's still recuperating. He's doing well, better than ever, but better than ever, you know, post-stroke. But so that kind of kept me there for a while, and then it just took me a while to get back to Montreal, which I always wanted to get back to. I just didn't know how to make that happen. So Bucky and the music and the band, it all brought me back here, and I'm very happy to be back in Montreal.
Okay, great. Now, sorry, who is Bucky for those of us who may not know Bucky?
Bucky is who I started Land of Talk with back in the day, Mark Wheaton. We call Mark Bucky Wheaton. He's an incredible drummer, jazz drummer. A lot of jazzers will know Bucky from his jazz chops, but he also is he's who started Land of Talk. We went to Concordia University together, along with Chris McCarron, the bass player, who is also back in the band. This is kind of the original Land of Talk as I knew it, and we kind of all splintered off almost as the band got to a little bit of traction. We all splintered off, and life got in the way. And then this past couple years has been a reunion, one of the best. Life-affirming, heartwarming reunions, I gotta say.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bucky produced this record, and
And yeah, he was on the last record too, but he's kind of what, you know, reignited the, got me out of my hiatus and reignited the Land of Talk aspect of my life. So yeah.
Let me podcast psychologize what you just said. Because
please do.
That's what happens
please
on.
Do.
That's what happens on these podcasts. So you take
no, that's great.
You take a long hiatus, and you actually circle back to your family. By the way, before I continue on with my analysis, you mentioned your father there. So your family's relatively well at the moment, you would say?
Yes, all in great health. And by the way, this is free, right? Like your analysis?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm not... usually I have to pay. It's sliding scale with my therapist, but it's $75 an hour. And since COVID, you know, I've been, we haven't had any sessions. So this is great. So thank you. I appreciate you, Vish.
I'm in the same boat. And I kind of think of you as my helper in these matters.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, we don't connect that often, I would say, Liz. But when I need help and you've been there for me, it's actually, I was looking through our text thread. And the last time we spoke.
It was a scare, right?
Yeah, I had a bit of a medical. Well, my mom was ill and then I had a thing and it was bad. And
then,
so you sent me some help to try to deal with my stress and anxiety. So all I'm saying is it's a two-way, podcasts are a two-way free therapy street is all I'm getting at.
You know what they are. It is. It's a quid pro quo.
Exactly. Interviews, they're conversations. So we're talking about stuff. So I'm glad to hear your family as well. And before I continue again with my analysis, by the way, you've left them to go back to Montreal. And now... there are restrictions because of the pandemic and COVID and everything else. How does that... I've had a few other conversations with people who, you know, Lito Pimienta can't go back to Colombia for the foreseeable future, and that's where she is from. And other people can't travel. For a while, we couldn't travel between provinces. Like, I'm not going to go to... I'm very concerned about my parents in Ontario, and I can't go back there. I would think for the foreseeable future. Oh yes,
to Calgary.
I'm in Edmonton. Edmonton, just
you're in Edmonton.
You got to be careful with that. The Calgary Edmonton friction is a real thing.
I know it is. Oh man, maybe I knew that and I just dropped that in for some little fire.
Exactly.
Right. So you are also separated from family.
Yes. It's the worst time I feel in a way.
To be
away from my parents. So how do you feel? I don't know when you made the move back to Montreal exactly, but how do you feel that? Like, I assume you feel the same. You probably can't go see them if you need to.
Yes, exactly. It's definitely something that I have to meditate on. It's definitely something that in my worst hours, like when my anxiety is higher, when I'm already feeling like the, you know, just the general like world sick, like angoisse, like I do think of like what happens if, and it happened to one of my close friend's father. He passed away and and they couldn't see them in there. And I just thought that's worst case scenario. So unfortunately that just has to go into my, work out how to deal with that, how to cope with that fear. Cause it's just awful. And so many people have lost loved ones and have been in that situation. So that's just a tough one. That's a hard one.
And I've been
FaceTime helps. FaceTime.
Yes, that's
really
right.
Really helps.
Yeah.
I was just FaceTiming with my dad right before this. So,
oh.
That totally helps.
Yeah.
It is
a strange thing, as you may know. I'm experiencing it because I have children that are coming up now. And then my parents start to do things in their senior years that feel a little childlike or there's a little, I mean, you've got this going on yourself there too. But so I had a sort of a scare. My parents, I lost like a childhood, we call them uncles, like, you know, your parents' friends in our culture, in Indian culture, you're like uncle, right? Uncle and auntie.
Do
the whites do that? Do you guys do that
too?
No,
we don't do that. Whites do stuff. Well, I guess I would say I have my auntie Vicky and uncle. Well, you know what? Maybe, but I wouldn't say my uncle.
Right.
I always do the disclaimer, oh, it's like a surrogate father, a surrogate parental figure.
Right.
So like,
yes.
But we don't say it as because I started watching the Patriot Act with Hassan Minhaj, and he says uncle, like aunties and uncles, so like
yes,
I get that, but
yes,
I'm learning. Well, but we don't have it's not the same.
Okay,
but yes,
just clarifying that fact first of all. But my parents' dear friend and his wife held a barbecue, and six people, my parents did not attend, but four of the six people contracted COVID, and then the host who I've known, you know, I'm trying the host of the barbecue passed away. And just last week. So then I'm like, and then my parents said, they call me, and then my mom said they attended the funeral, and I lost my mind, because as you may know, keeping track of the news, when they say there's an outbreak, it's because people have gathered for a funeral or a birthday party.
Yes,
so I lost my mind, and I'm here and I can't do anything. Now they did, once the air had been cleared, my mom and my dad was like, just so you know, like, we did not, everyone stood apart. It was all outside. Everyone was wearing masks. They did a little ceremony outside. But then I'm like, I can't do anything about that. But then I thought, if I was there, also, I can't do anything. You can't control people. You can't control your parents. You can't control your children on some level.
Exactly.
You got to let go, right? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So. It's the hard. It's so hard, and especially when it's your parents. Yeah. But yeah, you gotta live and let live.
Yeah.
Even if you feel like it's killing them, like even if it's just such a high risk, like even if they're living very high risk situations.
Well, they're in the demographic that is the most susceptible. So I'm trying to. That's the anxiety. Like, I'm trying not to be like my friend says. You can't be panicked about this thing, and I'm not. I'm a hypochondriac.
Well, you definitely can be panicked. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You're like, I'll prove it to you. I can be panicked.
Yeah. So I'm trying to keep calm. And what I've learned since I last talked to you, Dr. Powell, is that I have control issues and I need to let go of things. And so this whole thing has been kind of good. I am trying to be the calm center of the storm. And people are like, why? My wife and my relatives here, like, why can't we get together? Why can't we do this? And I said, guys, we can't.
No.
And they think I'm being a jerk. But then every 2 weeks, whatever I've said about precaution seems to come to pass. You know, other people.
Right?
I know. Yes. I don't take any joy in being right or righteous about it. I'm just like, guys, like, I'm just just follow the stats and the info. And anyway, sorry.
This is the one thing then that I'm sure it was initially painful to the realization, like the whole pandemic, happening upon us and crashing down. And I do have friends with control issues who are also saying a lot of the same things where this is actually, a lot of breakthroughs have been happening because it just forces you to you have to let go. Like, this is the ultimate kind of test of, or example of exactly what we can't control.
Yeah.
And then how do we cope? What are our this is what I've been learning all about, is distress tolerance skills. You know, how do we tolerate stress without hurting ourselves, without hurting others? So I mean, in a way, and I hate to do the silver lining thing of the pandemic, because it's also disproportionately affecting not white lives, you know, like, so I've got to make sure I'm not doing that. Oh, but you know, I've had so much time to reflect on me, and like, who fucking needs to hear that right now? Excuse my but there are, if we are talking in this vein, if it is forcing us to sit with ourselves, and for those of us who have the luxury of, you know, being able to be at home and not be forced out into the front lines yet, then this is a lesson in letting go.
Absolutely.
A master class in letting go.
I agree. This, the time we're getting a lot, for those of us, as you say, who are fortunate to get that time, I think the time has been useful, just for our own self-care. And again, these are sort of weird buzzwords to use, and I'm trying to be sensitive to the fact that...
Right? And I know we both are.
So. Well, to people who don't have the time, like, I know it's a luxury to have this time and sort of think about things and be calm. And so anyway, it is obviously a very strange time. So how are things in Montreal in terms of this stuff for you? Because for a while, Quebec, in our country of Canada, that province was... an epicenter is now sharing, and now I'm in Alberta. I'm in Edmonton. By the way, when you moved from Guelph, did the whole world collapse? Because that's what happened when we moved from Guelph, and I'm starting to think it's our fault. Like, we left, and like everything went to hell. And did you find that you?
Oh, I didn't notice that when I left. But you know what? You're not wrong. When it is true. When did you packed up and went? Like, what? Right after, in the new year?
Yes, January we left, and then I started to hear from. People were, people I loved were having issues. Beloved business owners were passing away suddenly. And I was like, what is happening? There was a stabbing in downtown Guelph. Like, downtown Guelph is...
What?
It's getting.
Oh no! You were like the load bearing. You were the
I don't mean to put this on us, but we sold our house and remotely, and then you know because of that market
butterfly effect. Yeah.
Yes, the market's so dumb. We were like we did well, so to speak. You know, we oversold.
Nice.
And yeah. Yes, that was fine. I guess we took advantage of a system that I had been criticizing for 10 years because we couldn't. One of the reasons you can't move anywhere. You can't have two kids and a two bedroom house forever. It's not viable. And then you try to move and the real estate's crazy. Anyway, then February we sold the house. And then that's when you think on it, that's kind of when everything went south, like a month later.
Wow, so, it is true. Yeah. Looking back, what have you done?
I don't know. I don't take any joy in any of this. And now I'm all, like I said, people are mad at me because I've been correct about a few things. And now they're like, do you know things that we don't know? Who are you? What is going on?
Yeah, then it's suspicious.
Yes,
all of a sudden.
Yes.
Yeah.
But did you, when you left Guelph, did it get better? Did it get worse? Did you hear anything?
Oh no, when I left Guelph, it was so long ago. Oh man, and I must have had my head so far up my, I don't even know. I don't think anything changed.
Okay, anyway, sorry, I was just being.
Oh, I know when I left Guelph, it was, I missed being a big fish in a small pond. That's all I noticed.
Yeah.
For my own personal, like, but anyway, yeah.
So how is Montreal, I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the place here, but how is Montreal to live in? During this whole thing?
Well, to be honest, because of just who I am as just like a very solo dolo kind of person, I isolate pretty much on the regular, for better or for worse. So I got my dogs, you know, I'm a homebody.
Yep.
So for me personally, in one way I was thinking, personally, this isn't much of a switch. Like once I'm off tour, all I want to do is stay at home and, you know, Netflix and play music and hang out with my dogs. But I have noticed that it is crucial that I do, like, not being able to leave the house at all. Like, it was almost like being on double lockdown. Like, I already personally self-isolate. So then to not even be able to, when I needed that little sanity kind of just to go out and socialize just for a bit with somebody, or even just to go to, the pharmacy and just kind of scan the aisles mindlessly, almost as like a med. I know everybody knows what I'm talking about. Just kind of that, you just kind of get into that meditative state if you have the luxury of having a little bit of time on your hands. Yeah. Just those little moments I realized meant a lot more than I had given them credit for. So, and just being able to go for a coffee, like little things like that, that actually were, you know, had a lot of weight for me, like a lot of meaning, and just in my kind of daily interactions. I mean, actually, in terms of conversations, like you're probably somebody who has the most conversations in life, and you have a family and you do podcasts and you seem very, you're conversationalist, and I haven't had a conversation, like save like a couple conversations with friends, but like, those are friends who we kind of finish each other's sentences. But like having like an actual intelligent conversation where you're coming up with new ideas and you're like getting to know something, like that is just this whole foreign concept. Like I'm actually impressed with myself right now. Like you understand what I'm saying.
Yes,
I think this is going fairly well.
I was a little bit freaking out before.
I was like, do I need to meditate again? Like what am I going to talk about? What is talking? Like, but then I realized it's Vish too. And you definitely create a really nice bedding, like a nice, like just a nice soft place to land conversationally. So I am very grateful for that. But so the pandemic has been, in a way, it hasn't really changed much in my day to day. But when I really need it most, like I am suffering a little bit. I am happy that the lockdown has, like the guidelines have been lifted a bit in terms of that I can actually, you know, have backyard hangs, socially distance hangs with some people, especially my friends with kids who, like, I miss those kids. Those are kids that I would take care of. Like, as soon as I'd be off tour, then I'd be able to hang out with all these little kiddos. So that has been, that's been great. But I do notice, of course, it's in my neighborhood, a lot of people are wearing masks, but in my neighborhood also, like in any of the white like neighborhoods, all the Anglo neighborhoods, nobody's wearing masks.
Right.
And then in all of the like more like working class and like black neighborhoods, and like in Park X where it's more, like black and brown and more immigrant. That's where everybody's wearing masks. And I feel like if you're not wearing a mask, just get out. Like it's almost racist. It's racist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wear a mask.
Yeah.
Don't, I don't. So that's what I've noticed. Obviously Montreal has its racist issues.
Yes.
So
yes.
That hasn't changed. But one thing at a time, I guess.
First of all, thank you for the kind words and thank you for that response. It means a lot to hear that from you. I am similarly someone who is fairly self-contained. If I can help it, I'd prefer to stay at home and do work.
And
I mean, I miss going out to events and I miss going out with my family to stuff. But I'm also calm and so far I can deal with this. Are you learning about, you're learning about yourself. Are you learning about how you relate to other people? You were just kind of talking about that observationally, the people that you align with, but also the people that kind of upset you. And I feel like part of this social isolation is actually teaching us a little bit about how we tend to socialize, like how we relate to people on the street and strangers. Have you found that? Are you kind of, do you miss the crowds of people? Do you miss taking them the metro, the subway, the bus, or whatever? Like, or are you like, you know what? It's kind of nice. I don't have to deal with people. Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I really love the incognito. I love the not having to deal with people, especially someone who's female passing or woman.
Yeah.
Someone who passes as a woman. Woman presenting. I don't know what to say anymore about that. The binary is completely just, I've had enough of it. And I don't like, so, but someone who like me, who presents as a woman who has been groped, assaulted, on some more times than I can count and than I care to. I do feel, save a couple of situations that happened with this guy with a flip phone who was kind of filming under women's skirts, that happened. But I find I'm really feeling I like the distance. Like I find it's almost this extra stay away. Cause a lot of triggers for me are when people are really close, especially men, like, and kind of walking behind. So in that respect, I like it in the respect that I like covering my face. I like not having to, but this is all from the perspective of from a woman, a survivor of the male gaze, which we can't get away from, but also just from actual physical assaults, sexual assaults. So I don't know how much that is informing my relief in these situations where I'm like, you know, a little, I feel more at ease going out, and I appreciate the distance.
Yeah.
But again, that's could be completely just from my perspective of my lived in experience. I do find it that I worry for other people. Like I tend to really go out of my way to give people even more space than I did before. Like, so in that way, I find outings are a bit stressful. Going out with my dogs.
Yeah.
I find like just walking the dogs, which used to be like, oh yeah, three times a day we go out, go for long walks. Now it's kind of like, well, what are they getting on them? Like, I have to go all the way into the street with, like, it just becomes all these other things to negotiate and then washing them. Like, it's all these other things to negotiate. So that's stressful.
I think our relationships with each other, we're already a little fraught. You go out in the world and you feel like, even if no one's really in your way, I do feel like I've been living in Guelph and driving to Toronto, I kind of have observed the change and shift in driving habits. And I feel like it's symptomatic of some kind of social issues we're having where people just assume that if you're in their way, you don't matter. And I'm going to, you know, I might drive dangerously to get around you or whatever, but you don't really, you shouldn't be in my way. And I feel like now, like you say, I go to the grocery store in my mask and my gloves and there's tension. Like there's more, I'm used to getting stared at because I assume because I'm a brown man in a mostly white place. So I'm kind of used to those looks. But now the tension and the stress in the glares and the stares, we are more, like you just described, I think it's fair to say, Liz, like suspicion of the outside. I took my dogs for a walk and I don't know what they're getting on them. implicitly you're kind of like people. Other people are going to make, we're relying on other people to do the right things.
Yes.
And it's creating more and more tension between us than ever before. So I'm a bit concerned the way forward here. And I think it's a leadership thing. I really wish, honestly, it was mandated somehow to say you have to wear a mask and you can't, you know, you have to be, it seems very loosey-goosey. Do you concur?
Yes, I concur. I believe that honestly, for our responsibility to others, I don't know in how many different graphic ways, how many different cute pictures. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to, I'm not sure how you're supposed to get that message across to people who are resistant to the mask. Like, that's a whole area of like communication and like psychology. Like, yeah, how do you let people know that it's not a rule, like not an authoritarian rule, but it's out of a community spirited, like, yeah, I don't know how you're supposed to find the language to be able to do that. Because I find even if we, even though I am for like mandating, yes, everybody needs to wear a mask, the same people who aren't wearing it anyway are not going to wear it even when the rules, you know what I mean? Like, even if you make it mandatory,
well,
it's more of like, or you know what I mean? Like,
there's an erosion of like, we're the least, it's the worst time for all of this. We're the least galvanized we've ever been. We're very fractured in terms of how we consume information. No one trusts one source. Everyone, if you say like, well, here's a doctor, here's an epidemiologist, they've had 50 years experience, they'll say, well, I don't trust that person. I trust the quack or whatever. And you can't.
Yeah.
So we have this, like, there was always already this erosion of trust. And then that has led to an erosion of decorum. And now we're here. And and so we don't have a global organization, like, say, a World Health Organization, to say everyone needs to do this. But then when they try to do that, certain leaders around the planet will say, well, I don't believe in them, and we're taking our money away from them. It's at the worst time to be internet fractured as we have become. And this is none of our business, you and me. We're not doctors, Liz. We're not scientists.
Right, yeah.
But I'm just, as a human who thinks about things, it's weird.
Well, so there, it's as a human and speaking to the humanity of it, like, I think that's the part for me that's most, I guess, depressing is just that we're not thinking about the human scale. Like, we're not thinking of the humanity of it. And so that's that blind spot, I think, is the hardest one to swallow, because that's what are we doing then? But in terms of leadership, it's pretty abysmal. I don't even know if it's worth talking. Like,
no, I mean, I don't know how to fix it.
I have, like, these faces flashing in front of me. Like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, Bolsonaro. Oh, yeah, Trump. Oh, yeah, Trudeau. Like, I'm just thinking, like, it's just a cartoon. It's just a circus of, like, it's meaningless right now, because they're not doing anything. And on top of that, also, just all the other stuff that Trudeau's not doing that we could also be talking about.
In the midst of this, what I would characterize then, I guess, as a communications breakdown among other kinds of breakdowns, you have an album out called Indistinct Conversations, which I thought was fascinating. And I don't know.
Really?
Well, I thought it was fascinating for, like I say, I was kind of, I guess, as the potential leader of this conversation to some extent, I was like, Indistinct Conversations. That's an interesting thing to sort of articulate. And I don't know where that sort of title comes from, because I feel like there's a lot of personal stuff going on this record. And there's a lot of, it seems to me anyway, personal address of maybe a specific individual or what have you. I'm not sure. We can maybe talk about that. But let's start. I don't normally say, hey, what's your album title about? But given that
you can ask me, it's from a very specific thing. So
I just think, given what we were just talking about in terms of how we communicate and socialize, and then you have this thing called Indistinct Conversations, and then for those who haven't heard the record yet, there are these, I think, unless my speakers in every device are blown, they're kind of very low mixed kind of conversational fragments kind of coloring the record. And I thought, oh, there's something going on here about how we communicate and what we listen to and how we hear each other. What would you say is going on just in that title, that umbrella concept, Indistinct Conversations?
Okay, so it's kind of a simple, almost at the first glance, a simple, almost disappointing answer. But then I think, well, because people would think like, oh, it's an album. I'm an artist. I'm like, you know, this is poetry. This is also, I'm a rock musician who has hearing damage and who every time they watch his Netflix listens with, I watch everything I watch with subtitles on.
Closed captioning?
So closed captioning. Well, not the closed captioning because that describes like,
oh, right,
the,
right.
Or what's it called? Like the descriptive video is descriptive, but then there's just the ones that are subtitles. And I guess, yeah, I guess actually this begs, I guess I don't know the difference between descriptive and closed captioning. But the one with subtitles, and I guess it would be closed captioning because it's describing what's happening in, so indistinct conversations is always, it's either indistinct chatter, indistinct conversations. Though that's kind of was a theme. Maybe the fact that I noticed that and that I zeroed in on that, and the fact that that resonated with me, that the idea of all this stuff being talked about, all these conversations happening in my presence, but not really being able to make out exactly what's being said. So everything's kind of, you know, not being able to really discern what's being communicated around me. That to me is just a common, that feels familiar to me since I was little. So I don't know what that's about. But I also feel like the idea of not being kind of neurotypical for whatever reason and feeling like the world, the outside world, all these people around me, everyone I know, is operating on this frequency that I can't quite key into. You know, like I feel like I'm just, like if I can just get a little closer, maybe I can hear. Like if I just can, you know, put the glass up to the door. Like, but I can just never, I just felt like I could never really kind of be in on it. So whatever that feeling is, that's what informed, that's probably what prompted my reaction or my kind of, that's what resonated when I saw the indistinct conversations on the screen. But then it kind of means probably a lot more than I would even understand. Like I tend to write records and then years later, the kind of theme or the meanings of the songs will reveal themselves. So it's kind of cool that way. But it also is probably frustrating for people who ask what the record's about because I'm not quite sure. It just kind of all reveals itself in little kind of pieces and little moments. But but yeah, that's the long and short of it.
No, that's good. I have,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I have this hokey notion that every song is kind of a conversation, meaning
it probably is. Like,
does that make sense? I always think of them
actually,
as like,
you're probably right. Actually, like
I think songwriters and you know, you express yourself. Sometimes you're talking to others. Sometimes you're talking to yourself, but pretending you're talking to others, and then you put it out into the world, and it's being kind of received by people, and you don't know how they're receiving it or understanding it. So I kind of thought maybe, as you were just speaking, it seems to me that you are capturing the abstract nature of what you do generally in that in that title. Like every song is kind of this indistinct conversation starter, at least, right?
Yes, that's, and that's also just as songs or as poems or as, it's even difficult for me to even call them songs sometimes until Bucky and Chris and we all kind of arrange it into this palatable, you know, something that's like over 3 minutes and it fits into that mold. I sometimes feel like they're on open-ended conversations still too. You're right, and some of it is stuff that I don't wanna deal with. Like probably a lot of what I write about or what goes into the songs are like, and I keep it cryptic probably too because it's the stuff that's the most meaningful or the stuff that I really want to say the most, but that I won't even write in my diary because I'm worried that I'll choke on a chicken bone or something and then my diary will be read by somebody, like a stranger. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sure. I think of like, I don't even want to write this stuff because it scares me to write or because I don't want to deal with it. So I put a melody into it and I put this tone or I kind of make it into this prayer, or I make it into this mantra, or I
yeah.
sculpt it in a way that I somehow I can process it or digest it, but it never really becomes like, sometimes I never understand it, or I can never really intellectualize it, or
yeah.
but it just, it goes into the song and then it's gone. Like, it's like, and you push it off like a little boat, like down the river you go.
Well, I started this session with some ham-fisted psychoanalysis, or I wanted us to go that way. We've obviously jumped around all over the place, but I want to get back to the fact that you mentioned that you moved back to Montreal and you moved yeah. into what seems to me, and I can't keep track of everyone who's been in the band over the years, but you suggest that you have kind of circled back to the origins of Land of Talk with
yes.
with Bucky and Christopher, right? So
yes.
And when I think of the origins of Land of Talk, when it came out of the gate, I was such a, you know, Liz, I've been a huge fan of your music since we were kids, I guess, really. Like, we're both kind of kids, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I didn't know you were a huge fan, but I always know you've been a champ. Like, you've always supported, but yeah, thank
well,
you.
Well, like, back to, like, Liz, when you were Liz Powell and Lizzie Powell, and then you had, like, what were you, LP?
When I played with Aaron Riches.
Yeah, that's right.
You remember that? I played fiddle with Aaron Riches.
Royal City All-Stars, he called it, I think.
Yes!
That's
yeah!
right. Saw you guys play at the Carden Street Cafe, which is no longer there, and I think you were all sitting on the floor. At least Aaron was. Aaron is. Did you know Aaron and I? Aaron was just on the show.
Yes, of course. I listened to it. That was great.
Oh,
that was
nice.
I loved that. That was. it brought me back to literally. I don't like thinking of like the good old days, but those. Aaron and you and Guelph, that was the good old days. So that was a nice.
It was pretty. Yeah, it was a fun time and it was formative for us. So that's probably why it was kind of fun and messy.
Yeah, and it was important and it was political and it was principled. Like, I just felt like it was really meaningful too, and it shaped a lot of what I still
absolutely
believe in today. So that was yeah, and your talk about Fugazi and
yeah,
and just what authority is.
Yeah. Like, oh, thanks for listening.
Oh my God. Like, sometimes I write stuff down on post-it notes that I.
Oh, so you were you were making notes for the essay I was going to make you write about that episode? Okay.
No, just poetry. Like, I wrote, like, I have all these. I don't even know what. Like, I have something that I don't even know what they're from because I don't quote. You're like the universe full of gas and mystery. That's probably not what. I'd worry I'd lose control and flip out. No, that's not that one. Where is it? Authority is a presence that captures my heart. That's something that Aaron said.
That's right. That's right.
Authority is it because you asked about, yeah, how does he negotiate kind of teaching theology or the like theology with them, I guess, like anarchy or what we were kind of doing back in the day, which anyway, I thought that, and you asked what authority was.
It's a bit of a clumsy line of questioning, but it is something that people...
No, it's...
Well, when you come from punk and you're always questioning parameters, and this is where I was kind of going. When Land of Talk leaped out of the speakers, it reminded me of more of a punk rock expression in the semi-traditional sense. Like, it was gritty. I think we've talked about this before. Some of your phrasing I thought was quite... In certain songs, I was like, this is someone who likes...
Yeah.
Guy Picciotto, for example,
yes!
from Fugazi, right? Like, there's a Land of Talk song where I think I asked you, like, is that from Smallpox Champion or what?
Yes,
yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
is.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
what about?
That's
right.
Yes, totally,
of course.
Totally. So that when it came out of the gate, I was just like, oh my God, this is perfect. Like, this is it was like a perfect Guelph Montreal sound, and it really resonated with me at the time, and so we're at a point where you've gone back to that configuration, but the delivery in terms of communicating emotions is a little different. Your singing is different. You're speak singing here and there, I would say. You're singing more gently. What is going on there? And this has been an evolution, like your singing has evolved throughout your records, but as we land here. As we land here and you're trying to communicate things that are loaded, emotionally loaded, but your delivery is a little more measured, I guess.
Yeah.
What's going on there? Is there something going on there in terms of I'm going to chill as I express myself a little bit more instead of like going all in, like screaming or yelling or what have you?
Yeah. Well, okay. I feel like there's probably just off the bat, because what do I know? But I feel like if I am... There's probably a couple things that informed that. We didn't have a rehearsal space anymore. Like, I realized, like, a lot of the earlier records, we always had a space, or I had a space where I could go to and be really loud and plug in, like just be like chaotic and loud and not, and nope, you, like it was always like in an industrial area or like a commercial area. So, you know, playing well into the night. And now I feel like when I moved back, I was subletting a friend's place and the walls were paper thin and I was doing a lot of, and then we were recording, not in a studio. I mean, this is the first time where, I guess also, let's be honest, there was no money to yeah. make like even a, to make a $20,000 record or even a $10,000 record. Like, we did a lot with very little. And Chris McCarron, who is a wizard, you know, in a number of areas, ended up getting all these great deals on like used gear. And we built a studio in Bucky's basement. Bucky and I and Chris, we just kind of figured out how to make a record. Like, so I think a lot of, and then the hours that we were working were kind of not conducive to like losing our shit. You know, like I feel like also the demos for the record before this one, Life After Youth, Bucky and I met in Toronto. He was coming from Montreal and I came in from my hometown, like Orillia, which was north of Toronto.
Yep.
We met in Toronto and Charles Spearin of Do Make Say Think and Broken and the Happiness Project. We know, I don't know if he even needs an introduction.
Charlie's been on the show. Yeah, people.
Charlie, well,
a few episodes, a couple hundred episodes ago. Charlie's been on the show. Yeah.
Okay, we know and love Charlie.
Charlie Spearin,
humble,
yeah.
complex, beautiful poet, philosopher. Like, so anyway, totally generous. He lent us his rehearsal space. So a lot of like, so Bucky and I for a couple nights were just going off, and we have a lot of demos of these like way heavier songs that then just like they didn't make it onto Life After Youth, and we were kind of trying to get them onto this record, but just I think just a lot of circumstance was keeping us from being able to kind of go full out, would also mean if the music isn't really loud, then I'm probably not going to be projecting, you know, like if the vibe's not there, I'm not going to just kind of impose a more kind of declarative or like a punk vibe.
Yeah.
But that still wants, like that's, I still want to let that out. And I still, we need the room to do it in. So I feel like, but I also feel like discovering Kurt Vile.
Yeah.
And his delivery of kind of like this conversational, kind of like he's talking to himself. He doesn't have a lot to prove. Like, I don't know what it is, but I just, that really, it showed me that I don't have to yell and scream to get a point across. And that also, like, vocally, I don't want to do that to myself every night. Like, so I feel like there's, like, probably four or five things that are informing why the record is a little bit more relaxed in its vocal delivery and stuff. But,
you know,
but it doesn't mean that I don't want to not, like, I still have a lot to sing loudly about, but
yeah,
just not for this record. I think this needed to be a little bit more of a calm endeavor.
You know, I don't know that people recognize just how physically taxing singing with great passion night after night on tour can be. I interviewed Guy Picciotto, as I alluded to earlier, and sometime during the Fugazi hiatus, I just was asking him about some aspect of that, and he said that he's like, I don't think people realize just how, like, I can't, by the end of a tour I could barely get up, like I couldn't talk, and I couldn't, is physically, we put everything into every show and I couldn't do it anymore. So like on some level he was like, I don't quite miss it per se, like I don't want to put words in his mouth, but
he was kind of
alluding to the fact, like, I don't think people recognize just how exhausting it was. And also, like, to your point, Kurt Vile, Leonard Cohen, Courtney Barnett, Bill Callahan,
I was gonna say Courtney too, yeah totally,
David Berman, there are certain people who put a lot of passion forth in sort of speak singing, like there's so much passion in Bill. I don't want to spoil anything, but the first song on the new Bill Callahan album that's going to be out at some point.
I just got shivers. What? Yeah, I also, Bill Callahan. Sorry.
I don't want to ruin a joke, but he quotes I'm not going to
ruin
the joke.
Ruin it for me.
Well, I know, but there's other people who are saying, I don't want to, should I ruin it for everyone? Okay.
Ruin it for everyone.
Well, there's a very, let me just say this. There's a very,
I hate surprises.
Okay, I'll tell you after we're done for real. I don't want to ruin Bill's joke. But what I'll allude to the fact is he starts his new record by quoting a very famous opening introduction from a live country album. Mm-hmm. It's just a statement, but it makes me laugh every time I hear it. And it has nothing to do with the song. He just says something. And it's just, he has a way of putting forth so much emotion and humor and pathos. Like there's people like that. And I feel like you're maybe, are you in there? You're trying to go, like you're trying to find
what?
That.
Well,
I'm not trying to put you in the same
gift basket right now. If you do think, what's your address?
No, you are. You are.
No,
you.
I just think that speaks like that. First of all, yeah, Bill Callahan. Oof, I would have also mentioned him, but that just seems to be implied. Like, I feel like also in some conversations about music, there are just things that are implied. Like Fugazi. Yes, yeah. We don't even need to go there.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Also, Bill Callahan. Obvious. Like,
yes.
I, you know,
yeah.
And Will Oldham, this kind of. And you know what? I was watching a documentary on Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, yeah.
I realized, what is the song? Send in the Clowns?
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. That song and just the kind of the conversational, the way it's delivered and the way in a lot of musicals is kind of this, like there's these spoken moments and they go into song. I realized how much I had a music box that played that little, it was like a jewelry box that when you opened the drawer,
mm-hmm.
it played Send in the Clowns. And I kind of started thinking about, you know, I often overlook that, or maybe I don't take it seriously or I don't, but there are parts of my musical influences too that come from, like early childhood memories of music and of vocal, like even like Sound of Music, like just the
yeah.
way that a vocal line would be delivered. And sometimes, yeah, in that kind of talky way. And I always thought, why don't I do that more? Why am I always why am I always singing? Why can't I do the Kim Gordon kind of thing?
Yes.
You know,
there's a mistake.
So cool.
It is. And there's a mistake in assuming that someone who speaks singing, so to speak, is dispassionate. I guess what we're getting at is like there's a lot of emotion in people
yes.
speaking to one another. And when they put it in a song, it gives the narrative they're even conveying a whole new weight or meaning. And I think that's going on here for sure.
Nice.
I did allude to the fact that I thought perhaps these are songs, or some of the songs might be about specific people, or I feel
yes.
there's a lot of storytelling here.
Yes.
I don't want to pry too much, but did you have a particular subject in mind, or are these songs?
I don't know. Well, yeah. I'm trying to think, and again, my memory is so, it's just really bad. Like, I don't know how, like, and it's only getting worse, but. And so especially for like the songwriting process, I'm starting to try, and even for the next record, I'm trying now to keep really clear notes as to even what inspired a song. Because I'm curious now, like,
yeah.
what the heck, if I'm just like, it's like I'm just flying by the seat of my proverbial pants, like creatively, I'm just kind of like, whoa, where's this song? Like, I'm just this passenger.
Uh-huh.
And that's great and all, but I am starting to get curious about like, what are my songs about? And maybe can I make them about something like, am I just this conduit, or what is this attitude? Like, can I be a little, can I have a little bit more agency in my song, or do I have enough? And is this what, like, but so sometimes to think about what the song is about takes me in this hole, not down a rabbit hole, but
yeah,
I think, or I don't want to like disappoint people when they realize, oh, this whole song was just built around one sentence. Like, and then you just felt like you, like, cause there's a like the new song that just came out, Now You Want to Live in the Light. There's a line that's just like, take a deep breath and you reach out to me. And this is like sad, but like, when my granny was palliative, I would just sit by her bed and hold her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would take her hand if she like, and I remember whatever, right, in her moments of before she passed, I just remember her taking a big breath and then her hand kind of moved over to my hand, like she was grabbing my hand. So that to me is this moment that
yeah.
I don't know how to write a 3.5 minute pop song about it, but I'm feeling something hard and I'm playing these chords and I'm singing this line, and it's just, for me, it's really healing. And for me, you know, like that's enough. But then I also realize, what else am I kind of saying here. So it's almost like every song of mine is based on a true story. It's based on a conversation, yeah, or it's based on something I wished was really going to happen or something that really did happen. It's based on that. But then I kind of take these tangents, which maybe just because of the way the melody goes, now I'm thinking, that's the melody takes me to another place that's inspired by something else. So sometimes it's like it's a bit of a mixed bag, but it's always like a mixed bag of meaningful things. But it's not like this linear thing. It's very stream of consciousness. And I know like Weight of That Weekend.
Yeah, there's a very Montreal flavor too. Like you mentioned Montreal. You clearly missed the city.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a rough night. It is Montreal.
Yeah, which is a very Montreal thing to say in some ways.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, and so there's little things like that where I feel like these are little breadcrumbs. Like for me, it just imbues or it kind of just evokes this little, even a color or a feeling or just like a scene or imagery. Like,
yeah.
And so it's in a way, these are just kind of, it's just poetry, you know, like
sure.
A lot of it is poetry. I'm sure if you saw it on the page, I don't know if you like, but I just, alive with music.
Yeah. I read the lyrics on the page as well. So I hear what you're saying, and you've already revealed to us that you're something of a post-it note poet. It sounds like
I can't believe I need to look at my wall too. And I'm like, oh my God, if anybody saw this, it looks like I'm a detective, like an amateur detective.
Muffin
caper is.
I appreciate your candor. No, it's nice. We've talked about your singing, your delivery, some of the intent. I'm curious about the sound of the record and how that relates to that, and particularly your approach to guitar playing, because I think there's some stuff going on here that you've dabbled in before, but is there something more distinct going on with your approach to guitar playing here?
This is completely, like a very laissez-faire. I was trying to be very much effortless. Like I used to get so stressed out about, I kind of felt like I was playing guitar for all the quote unquote women in the world. Like I kind of felt like I had to either, I felt apologetic if I wasn't virtuosic, and I can't play like a lead kind of guitar solo very quote unquote well. Like I'm not.
Supposedly. But I remember you used to do those Instagram guitar lessons. I don't know if you're still doing them, but they were, I can't remember. Are you?
Wait, what was I doing?
Didn't you do like an Instagram guitar lessons where you kind of made up chords sometimes and you're like, I play guitar kind of weird, so I'm going to teach you how to play some of my songs because they're odd.
Yes.
And people have been asking me, have you kept that up?
No, but only because those are all the songs that I could teach on an acoustic. A lot of my songs, and I just don't, again, it's always circumstantial. Like, a lot of the songs I can only play like on my SG just because I have better facility up there on the fretboard.
Sure.
Because I play everything so high up because I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I appreciated it as an instructive. And again, we were
Awesome.
Well, we were talking about leadership before. And I feel like, again, people may bristle, as Aaron Riches said in our conversation about.
Yes.
And I mentioned Steve Albini and Ian MacKay bristling when I suggested they might. And I can see you doing the same. But I think you take your role as a public performer who might pass as a woman seriously. I feel like you take some responsibility in that role generally.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're like,
oh, totally.
Okay.
It's
so,
not too much. Like, yes, definitely.
Right. Because you remember what it was like maybe to have or not have people doing that. In, like people you admired put out a record, toured it, that maybe that's it. Other people said, hey, I want to have, I know that you might be struggling. Here's my path. Here's an entry point into a path to get you going. I feel like you have that a little bit. That's a little Guelph too, I feel like. We learn from each other and we try to teach each other something. And you seem to agree.
And care. Yes, I agree. Yes, it's very, I feel like, again, that's a more of like a community care minded kind of hands out type of, being a neighbor, being a not an elder, or I feel like as I'm getting older too, I want to be aware of kind of what would make, what will make me a good elder, so to speak, and how I can be the best I can be to people who might look to me for either because they see something in themselves in me, or, you know, maybe I'm doing something just a little bit left of center that is kind of, they're seeing some freedom in that. So that I do take very seriously because I have relied on that in other people.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
In the same way that, yeah, like Aaron talked about Ian, just like that, I would hope that people, yeah, I give that to people.
I think when enough people ask you how you got started, you start to recognize that, oh, that's a question that's circulating. How do I start doing what you do? How do I just start? Because that's the hardest thing. It's people often say, how do you write a book, to people who write books? And they say, I just start and then I go. And it sounds simple, but like that's what people need to hear. Oh, you just start and you see what
you
happens.
You just do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
and you got to see somebody just do it. You know, you got to actually know somebody who isn't super impressed, you know, like just here's a normal person that is by no means any more trained than anybody else, but just you got to do it. Obviously, I have, again, see, I got to watch what I, how I say things, because there's a tremendous amount of opportunity and privilege that also has helped me. So I just,
No, but I know. Yes. It's difficult, but we've landed here because I simply asked you about your guitar playing, and you said you take, I think it speaks to what I'm getting at. You said you started to feel, well, you were saying, you take your guitar playing a little self, you're a little self-conscious about doing it well. And I think part of it is, you know, people are watching you, and not necessarily in that male or musician gaze way. I think you know that there are people coming up who need to learn. I'm sorry, I might be imbuing you with too much responsibility, and forgive me if
I
am.
No, go for it.
But I do feel like that's the responsibility I think you take, is like, other people need to know how to do this. I kind of know how to do it, or I think I know how to do it. Here's how I did it. Maybe this will get other women or other people to do it. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like just sharing tools. I think that's something that I definitely is meaningful to me, and something that I do try, that I do think is important. You share your tools. It's like the decent, cool thing to do. Like, something that has helped you, obviously, you want that to, if it can help even one person, awesome.
Yeah.
And awesome. And I know that could sound trite, or that could sound like, but I mean it. So it's not.
Right. So you switch gears a little bit with your guitar playing in some ways. There's more acoustic guitar. I feel like you're playing a bit more minimally sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. So, yes, I wanted to spend less time thinking about what I was playing, because I've gone down that, I've started doing it again, where I fall in love with building these chords and these voicings. Like I do fall in love with, like, I could create worlds, and I can just listen to the same four chord progression, as long as one note is kind of moving around in there differently. Like I could listen to that. I love it. So I was trying to go a different way and not get so distracted with how I'm building, like not to get too lush with the building the chords. And I wanted to leave a lot of space for then other outside ears, outside eyes, or to interpret it, like Eric Hove, who's an incredible horn player and who plays flute. I didn't realize that until Bucky was like, oh yeah, Eric came by and he played on a couple tracks, and I had no idea he was such an incredible flautist. But
right.
So yeah, and then like Parker Spur, who's this great keyboard player. Just, I wanted to just step back, because I already know the notes that I already know what kind of sonic tapestry I would kind of build and weave. And I just wanted to know what it would be like if I stepped back and just trusted, you know, Pietro also, oh my gosh, Pietro Amato, French horn player, keyboard player. He has played on, the last record. He's toured with us. He knows, we went to Concordia to the music program together and the sound recording program. He pays attention to things that I don't even realize I'm doing in rehearsals, or even before we were in a band together. He can remember stuff about how I would just play the MIA album like over and over again in my van. Like, and he remembered me like banging on the dashboard. Like, so he has like, I love that I kind of stepped back and just trusted the players that I've been playing with forever and who know me to just play the music, like just play what the song asks for. So that was kind of cool. But yes, you're not wrong in noticing that I'm not like filling up, I'm not filling it up with my guitar playing.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that I won't fill up the next record with my guitar playing, but for this one, I just kind of wanted a break. And in terms of playing these songs live, which I can't believe is even I can't even believe I'm wondering if we're ever going to play these songs live again. But I was thinking of a live set and how sometimes just in terms of like Guy Picciotto was talking about the physical strain. Like there are certain songs after I'm playing them, I just physically I'm feeling like, because I really do get in physically to the whole song.
Yeah.
The chords sometimes I'm doing are just the stretches or they're just like really, they're just kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Comfortable songs to play. So I was also kind of trying to give myself some respite and create these songs that are almost more like meditations or just like, it's just they're deep, the deep breaths. Yeah. These are like the deep breaths of our discography.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the record's called Indistinct Conversations and yet you're talking about getting things out more directly, I think.
Yeah, weird. Funny how that happens.
I think it's, you're right. It's probably a note about this on a post-it on your wall, just explaining. It'll uncrack the whole code. I'm trying my best.
It's true.
Consider me the personification of a post-it note at this point. I'm just doing my best. I'm like a private eye.
I'm becoming a cartoonist, too, so soon there'll be illustrated post-it notes.
Well, I want to congratulate you on this record, Liz. It's out on Dynalone Records, I believe. Yes?
Yep, Dynalone in Canada and Saddle Creek in the States.
Right. So you mentioned the tour part. What is sort of next? Like, what do you do? Do you have...
Oh, my gosh.
In terms of activity for this record, I want to get to that, but are you writing? Have you been writing since you wrote this batch of songs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Lots of writing happening. And yeah. Oh, and yeah, Bucky, we did 2 days in the studio already, just recording new stuff.
Great.
It's pretty exciting. Oh, and I sent him some other stuff too. Yeah, and there's another. Yeah, there's like a whole record.
Okay, great. That's awesome.
Ready to go. I almost feel like we should have just waited and then we should just release a double record when the, when the pandemic fades.
Yeah.
Just fades away.
Yeah, apparently that's what it's going to do. So.
Yeah, it just fades away.
Are you okay in terms of, this is a weird question, but I have been asking musicians this, like, are you going to be able to... stave off financial calamity for the time being? Like, are you okay?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know if I should say this, but it's so frustrating. I've been like Curb has saved me. First of all, I was living in a place that I couldn't afford because I didn't know Montreal, hated dogs.
Oh, right.
So to live in a place that I thought would I thought I could spend $700 a month or $800 a month max, or, anyway, you can't do that. And I was one person. So I was spending $1,500 a month for 2 years to live way beyond my means. I went into so much debt. Finally, right before February, a friend of a friend had to leave, almost fly by night. And she gave me her place, which is so affordable.
Good.
It's half of what I was paying. I could finally get a leg up. And it's right when Curb went into play too. So as I'm not paying off my debts, I can afford to live and live with my dogs. And but unfortunately, because they say you can't make more than $1,000 in
for
that
the
month.
Curb? Yeah, yeah.
Through the Curb. As a musician, you never know what a royalty payment is going to be. And a royalty payment is quarterly.
Mm.
So I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm just going to say it because I think I got paid a royalty payment of $1,003.
Oh, my God.
And it went direct deposit.
Sorry.
So now and I think the rule is now that so now I can't get the next Curb payment because of $3.
Oh, my God. Listen,
a royalty, which I'm grateful that I got it, but I have never gotten more than I think my last royalty payment from that place was $33 back into
weird.
So I never in a million years would have thought I would get, of all the times I could get more than $1,000 royalty, it's during COVID. Anyway, so I don't know financially. I'm also doing I've opened up my bubble to my best friend's family, and I'm helping her take care of her two kids. So that's helping me twice a week. But yeah, I mean, financially, I mean, it's not like music was, like, music was barely paying the bills, but at least consistently, if we were getting underpaid, at least like a bunch of gigs that have you underpaid is still, you're getting paid. Now it's like, there's not even that. So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
I've been having these kind of roundabout conversations with musicians about this. And I had Joe Casey from Proto Martyr on my show recently. We didn't really dig into it. And I found out subsequently through an interview he did that, you know, he just frankly said, someone just asked him that kind of question. And he said, our band shares a bank account and it's almost done. And we don't know that we can't tour. We make all our money from touring.
Yeah.
So it occurred to me, like, yeah, I didn't ask Joe about that. I should just, the reality for musicians without touring and venues is something we've kind of, I think, compartmentalized, because for some of us, there's a bigger picture to worry about in terms of health and safety and all that stuff. But this is a real financial reality that I'm trying to help spread the word about things for musicians. I think in my mind, it's something I'm trying to do with all my work here. And all I can say is, at this point, best of luck. I don't know what to say. I mean, I hope.
Right. Well, yeah. Thank you. And but it also speaks, there's also the large, like, within the, well, I know the music, the indie rock music scene, which is what I know best.
Yeah.
It is a lot of, like, not to say that we aren't struggling, but we are, it's a white industry.
Yeah.
It's a privileged industry. Mm-hmm. Many of the musicians do come from family, you know, like, it is a problem, and I do, and a lot of people are struggling, and it's like dire straits for a lot of people. But also, I also, again, would be remiss not to just highlight the fact that, yes, of all the industries, I still, of the artists who are struggling the most, it's probably not going to be the white indie artists. It's probably going to, you know, it's the black trans artists, and it's the indigenous artists. So, like, that's also a whole other level, like the music industry. If it is going to happen again, I really hope it happens in a different way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, Liz, thanks for this. So again, so Dynalone Records, Saddle Creek, the new album is called Indistinct Conversations. I want to ask you if you want people to kind of keep track of your doings, happenings, do you have places you want to send them, like on the internet or?
Yeah, I think that like the Land of Talk Music Instagram page is sort of the hub.
Okay.
And that's where my presence is when I am on social media.
Okay.
It will be there, and that's where I keep everybody abreast. And then there will be a link to, I think right now there is a link to all of the listening platforms, and you can pre-order the album, you can listen, and all that stuff. So just Land of Talk Music is our Instagram, and I say go to that, and that'll take you where you need to be.
Sweet. If there's a song from the record that we can go out on, which song would you pick and why?
I think I would pick Weight of That Weekend.
Okay.
Because it's the first time that I addressed, and a lot of this record, I realize, is addressing the Me Too movement and being, you know, coerced into things and not necessarily always having the power in certain situations. So this is, I think, Weight of That Weekend is the first time when this is me calling out the gaslighting and also letting myself know and other survivors know that there is, you know, life after all of that, and that it's okay to want for something better for yourself. So yeah, I think Weight of That Weekend is, and it all happened kind of after this weekend of just another instance of being at the hands, literally, of a man who doesn't take no for an answer. And frankly, if you can't take no for an answer, you shouldn't be having sex. So that's what I'm going to say, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's well said. And this is Weight of That Weekend by Land of Talk. Liz, thank you for making music. Thank you for this time. And I wish you the best luck with everything going forward.
Thank you, Vish. Same. And yeah, all the best to your family. And I hope we get to do this again. And I hope we get to see each other at some point.
Me too. Absolutely.
Okay. Take care, Vish.
And fuck you, Debbie. Always come at me from a different angle. Make me think I don't understand how I'm feeling to the feeling that
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Very special thanks to Elizabeth Powell for returning to this, the 555th episode of Creative Control. Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks for coming back on the show. Creative Control is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all Apple and Google platforms and other things. Two, if you can't find an episode that you've heard about and are looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my semi-regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter, at vishcreative or at vishkana. You can also visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. Again, $6 or more a month gets you access to exclusive audio content. Fugazi came up a bunch on this episode with Liz. There's some Fugazi content there that I have not posted on the regular stream from my archives. There's probably, based on the number of times I've spoken with members of Fugazi, there's probably more Fugazi-related content. Anyway, I'm not trying to use Fugazi as a lure necessarily. I'm just saying that's the kind of stuff that you might get if you support the show on patreon.com/creativecontrol. You can also support the show even if you don't want to hear another thing. Maybe you're happy with what you're hearing and you want to, you know, put some money for it. That would be great. patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. Also, for their in-kind support of the show, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. Also, my dear friend, and Liz's good friend, Jim Guthrie. Jim lets me use some music of his on the show. You should learn more about Jim and the music he lends to people and just hands out to people randomly at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you very much for listening to this episode, all about Land of Talk, and for maybe checking out other episodes of the show. Maybe the last time Land of Talk was on the show, you can listen to that one. It's in there somewhere. I don't remember which episode number, but it's there. And lots of other great stuff, too. Listen to other episodes, subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show. That would all be great. I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.